This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Acoustic ecologist Gordon Hempton is devoted to preserving America's quiet space, places devoid of human noise. An Arkansas bayou, a prairie at night, a bubbling spring. But finding these truly quiet places is becoming harder to do, and Gordon Hempton says we must act before it's too late. This hour On Point, Saving the Silence. You can join the conversation. Are you aware of the sounds surrounding you? Where do you find peace, quiet? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Baltimore, Maryland, is Gordon Hempton. He's a sound recording artist who for more than a quarter century has provided different kinds of audio to musicians, galleries, museums, and the media. In 1992, he won an Emmy for his sound recordings in the PBS documentary Vanishing Dawn Chorus. He's author with John Grossman of the book One Square Inch of Silence, One Man's Quest to Preserve Quiet. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Gordon Hempton, welcome to On Point. How nice to have you.
Oh, great. Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here.
How and where did your quest for silence begin?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, we can go pretty far back, but I think that I'll narrow it down to when I started out to try to become a better listener. The first places that I went to was my neighborhood, and then I expanded to the cities, and then I got on the trains, and I hopped freight and interviewed hobos, and it was that long wait between getting on locomotives and trains that I listened to nature, and in particular the songbirds that were singing next to me, and there were questions like, well, why does a bird sound like music to me? After all, it doesn't sing for my intention. And then I thought, well, why don't I record songbirds? And it wasn't that easy. The first five places that I tried to record were just inundated with noise, and that became my search for silence.
And so then, carry that further, how hard was it to find a place without human noise?
Well, and we're talking back to the early 80s, and it was a lot easier then, although it would take weeks of searching before I could find a place that it was even possible to have 15 minutes between noise intrusions. But today, it's much, much more difficult. There are only a dozen places left in the United States that I've been able to locate, and that's after 30 years of searching, where the noise-free interval is 15 minutes or longer during daylight hours.
Mm. So back in 1984, 21 places of noise-free intervals of 15 minutes or more?
In Washington State alone, that was the count. And today in Washington State, sadly, there are only three. One is Olympic National Park, the place I'm trying to save, and the other two are protected only by their anonymity.
Speaking of Washington State, let's listen to some sound from Olympic National Park, and then you'll comment. Gordon Hempton, those are two distinct sounds.
We're listening to an alpine cricket there, a very high frequency, just for scale. This is the sound of a jet flying above 18,000 feet over Olympic National Park, a sound that the FAA finds not important at all, that the National Park Service itself in 2008 declared, this was Mary Bomar, the director at the time, entered in the Federal Register that all sound sources above 18,000 feet would simply be ignored in their efforts to manage natural quiet. And so when we listen, when I listen to that jet pass over our national parks, I'm listening to the future soundscape of our national parks unless we do something. Hmm.
Tell us about the sonic pulse of America that you took.
The sonic EKG of our country. Well, I took this journey across this country from Washington State to the other Washington because I wanted to save Olympic National Park and have it become our nation's first no-flight zone, off-limits to all aircraft so that the natural quiet of that park could be preserved. But I wanted to do more than that. I wanted to listen to this nation, find out how difficult it still is to find silence. And when I say silence, I mean areas that are completely free of noise pollution for at least 15 minutes or longer. And I wanted to listen to Americans, their stories. And it was a fantastic opportunity. So the sonic EKG across the country is where I pulled out my sound level meter and I took these measurements, the quiet solitude in Canyonlands National Park, for example, which dropped to the bottom of the meter. It was somewhere below 20 dB. And then also places like the Indianapolis Speedway that were peaking up there at 126 dB, which was taking the public health, damaging hearing, and yet the vast majority of the spectators were without hearing protection. And you can see in that sonic EKG, as I was headed from one Washington to the other, for me, I was headed in the wrong direction. It just kept getting noisier and noisier. So, yeah.
you mentioned the sound level meter, and I wish you'd tell us, Gordon Hempton, the tools of your trade.
Well, the tools of my trade are basically, it's a microphone attached to a handheld computer that simply measures the amount of energy that we hear through sound and then gives it a reading and dBA values. So right now I'm talking at 60 dBA, but the surprising thing is because it's a logarithmic scale, if two people are talking at the very same time, the reading is not 120, it's only 63 dBA. So for every doubling of the power, basically you only get an increase of 3 decibels. So that's one of the tools of the trade, but the most important tool of my trade is this human head microphone system that I use, a binaural microphone system, because I record these vanishing natural soundscapes exactly how the human listener would hear them if they were there in person. So many of the natural selections that we'll hear during the show, if you like this, oh my God, you're going to love the live concert if you're resting next to a snowbank or in the rainforest and the many wonderful places this country still has to offer.
Let's listen to a few. This is a sound compilation that you recorded. Sunrises on all the continents, excluding Antarctica. You put it together. Here's the tune of a global sunrise. What do you hear in that?
Oh, I hear a planetary tune. You know, the Earth is music. There are all kinds of planetary tunes. And more than that, it's a solar-powered jukebox. So the closer we get to the equator, the louder it plays. And the further we get away from the equator, the softer, more spacious. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoy living with Olympic National Park as my backyard, is because there's the space, the silence is just as important as the sounds.
Tell me about the title of your book, One Square Inch of Silence. That is actually a place, isn't it?
It sure is. In fact, Jane, today is the not only Earth Day, the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, but it's the 5th anniversary of One Square Inch of Silence, which is a real place that I established in the Hoh Rainforest of Olympic National Park on Earth Day 2005. And what I did, and this was immediately after the recovery of an 18-month hearing loss, I decided, you know, saving silence is not going to be someone else's job. I'm going to try to do this, and I'm going to defend a single square inch of land surface from all human-caused noise intrusions. And so I walked 3.2 miles up the Hoh River Rainforest Trail, and I placed a stone on a moss-covered log, and I've been defending it ever since. Now, you might ask, you know, well, that's kind of a modest defense, but, you know, just everybody taking care of their inch. But because noise, when a jet passes over a national park, it literally drags a cone of noise 20 miles wide, destroying the oral solitude below. So by defending a single square inch, I'm actually able to manage a circle with a radius of 20 miles, which is 1,256 square miles, which is also roughly the size of Olympic National Park. But I'm not a noise cop, okay? I'm just a citizen with a concern and an awareness. And so these letters that I would send off to the noisemakers, the various airlines in every case, I'd include a CD so that rather than just read about those decibel figures, they could hear for themselves the damage that that jet is causing to this precious natural resource that's endangered. Three airlines cooperated.
Well, I want to hear more about that one square inch of silence and your very compelling personal story of hearing loss after this break, and much more. We're talking about silence and America's quiet places. Here's the sound of the American toad, recorded in Kentucky. It's the mating call, the love song of the toad. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about America's quiet places this hour. Acoustic ecologist Gordon Hempton is with me today. For years, he's been seeking out and recording America's natural quiet. His new book, just out in paperback, is One Square Inch of Silence. I want to play a recording of Gordon's, of the howling echo of coyotes in Olympic National Park in Washington State. Gordon, that's literally outside your bedroom window, isn't it?
It sure is. I live with Olympic National Park as my backyard. And this pair of coyotes was singing to me one night. And, you know, I listened for 5 minutes, actually, before I finally set up the equipment because I said, oh, be still, be calm if I set up the runaway. But this beautiful song, you know, I got to know these coyotes over the course of the summer, watch them raise their young, and I'd never heard them sing like this before or since, and I believe that they were celebrating, that they were on their own again. But other people, they will listen to this recording of coyotes and hear a recording of silence, the way the echoes just travel on forever. And this is one of the sounds we're going to lose if we don't do something to stop noise pollution in our noise-sensitive areas called national parks.
I'm curious, in that one square inch of silence that you found in Washington, what did you hear in that? What went through you? What was it that you felt?
It was that day, Earth Day 2005, that I walked up there, and I didn't know exactly where it was going to be placed. So it took 3.2 miles, basically 3 miles, before I could escape the noise from the visitors' parking lot down below. And then I like to take the advice of animals, and I noticed that there was an elk path that wandered off into the woods, so I followed that for about 100 yards, and the rain was falling and dripping from moss, which was very soft and into the puddles and tapping on the silao leaves, and the distant calls of winter wrens tweetering away, and the bugling sounds of elk, and it's just a beautiful little amphitheater appeared, a place that the elk had chosen. And so I decided, why not here?
Let's go to a call in Medford, Massachusetts. Barry is on the line to ask you about this very spot. Barry, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Gordon. I'm here to share some experiences that I've had out in the natural world. And I want to let people know that you can find it right in your backyard here in the Boston area. The spring peepers are going to be coming out soon, and they make an extraordinary sound. But the most extraordinary experience I've ever had was in a hike from Cape Alava Point,
sure,
Shy Shy Beach, on your backyard there.
Yeah, Olympic
there's
Park.
There's a boardwalk very close to the parking lot, actually, where you go over wetlands. And I stopped to tie my shoe, and for about, I'd say, 30 seconds, there was absolutely zero sound. Could not hear the surf, no plane overhead, no voices, no walking, no insects, no wind. It was absolute perfect silence, and it was an experience of awe. And whatever people are enjoying about your show today is a fraction of what they'll experience when they're out there hearing it live.
Barry, thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Olympic National Park, which the hike you took is in, and by the way, I think Shy Shy Beach is like the most scenic as well as the most sonic beach imaginable. But Olympic National Park is the listener's Yosemite, in my opinion, because not only is it sonically the most diverse park of all the 390 units managed by the National Park Service, but it's also the most quiet, the least polluted by noise. The noise-free interval at Olympic Park is commonly over 1 hour, where the average noise-free interval for many of our other parks, if they exist at all, is less than 5 minutes. Hmm. It's about the length of a pop tune. You need more time than that, really, to sink into nature's music.
Here's at the Olympic National Park, frogs talking to each other that you recorded.
Yeah.
That was a lesson of wildlife for you, I know.
Oh, it sure was. That was the Pacific chorus frogs, and they're active right now, I'm sure. They're going full steam at Olympic. It's springtime, although it's still raining there. We're waiting for the sunshine. But when I heard this, and I listen, you know, thoughtlessly, really. I just take it all in, and what could be simpler? One frog, then more frogs, then no frogs. The lesson there is that all I have is my voice. I don't control the soundscape. The community does. And so when I heard this and took that advice, I realized, you know, it's not really up to me to save silence. The only thing that I have is my voice. And so this is me croaking in the frog pond today, you know, putting it out there for the rest of the community to hear and respond. Are we going to save silence? Because if we are, now would be a great time to do it. And we're headed for the 100th anniversary of our national parks, and that's in the year 2016. And I would love to see a designated quiet place at Olympic, at Grand Canyon, also at Great Smokies and two other national parks.
Gordon Hempton, tell me your very personal story, your very compelling personal story, which was the inspiration for your book. You're an acoustic ecologist, which experienced your own hearing loss for 18 months, no?
Yes, 18 months. It was very devastating, and it was actually started out with my bedroom window, the same one that we heard those coyotes. Well, I like to sleep with the air moving around me, and I woke up one night, and there was this thump, 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 And I actually thought my hearing was getting particularly good, and I was listening to a new class of super tanker plowing the Straits of Juan de Fuca between Canada and the U.S. But exactly the opposite was happening. Within 2 weeks, I lost 60 to 90 decibels of my hearing, put me out of work. But even worse than that is that it generated this crazy noise inside of my head that was inescapable, and I couldn't go anywhere and find quiet. So I lived in a world of denial. I took my time going to audiologists, but finally it was diagnosed with a problem in my middle ear, but an operation would be too risky. I might never have normal hearing again, and so I decided to wait it out. And all of a sudden, in a brief flash, it came back 100%. I was listening to the crackling of the fire and listening to the creaking of my grandfather's rocking chair, and then it snatched again, just disappeared. I had just a glimpse of it, but I knew that it was possible, and those times of restoration came back more frequently, lasted longer, and when that happened, I said, okay, I am going to establish 1 square inch of silence and defend that single square inch from all noise pollution.
That experience made you appreciate sound in a different way. I want to listen to some sound from off the coast of Hawaii, off the Kona coast, because I want you to tell the very interesting story about that. Here it is. Beautiful humpback whales. What's the story, Gordon?
My fiance and I, we were out in Hawaii. I was there to record the humpback songs, but we arrived there, and the boat that we had planned on using for the whale excursions had a breach in the hull, and so the only thing available to us was a 2-person sea kayak, and I had never kayaked before. So, but we decided we'd go out there anyway, and we went about 3 miles offshore. And my fiance, she is deaf. And so we kind of have an interesting relationship. But she does have a cochlear implant in one ear that she can use to a certain degree. And she, although she has profound hearing loss in her other ear, she can use some amplification. And this was the first time that she was ever to hear anything about whales. And she knew that whales just look magnificent, but she hadn't known their song. Well, we learned from that because, you know, especially in a new relationship, men and women, they use the same words but mean different things. And we found that we could actually try to whale speak to each other. And that worked great because it wasn't so much about understanding the other person as much as being heard. And so I could belt it out, and she could belt it back, and we had a great relationship. Yeah, that's wonderful.
It's a great story. Let's go to the phones. I have so many people lined up here to get in, Gordon.
Okay,
first, in Montreal, Canada, Rob is on the line. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I would just want to, hi, Jane, thank your guests for documenting and recording these extraordinary sounds of nature. And this week with the transatlantic flights practically halted, I noticed just outside my house, which is close to the airport, a wonderful silence that I haven't heard for almost 20 years. I heard the birds, I heard even the chipmunks and so forth, and it really kind of was a big break from the constant barrage of noise pollution we get in the city.
That's such a great point, Rob. Thank you. There was people
Wonderful.
In London who were experiencing the same thing, Gordon, people who lived around Heathrow
Wonderful.
Because of
and
the volcanic cloud of ash, all those canceled flights, people living around Heathrow who were actually hearing things that they hadn't for 25 years.
And the air traffic overhead and that noise has robbed us of so much that it took place, you know, in small penny change at first. And now, particularly after 9/11, when we had several days where communities in the Washington, D.C. area close to Reagan Airport, for example, They could hear their community again. Mm. They could hear their footsteps. They could hear the voices of their neighbors. And you know, the air traffic, while we've learned to accept it on one hand, I think part of that acceptance is that we think we can't do anything about it. But you know, we can, because the FAA does reroute aircraft. In fact, although they do not try to avoid any national park, all right, they do avoid the U.S. tennis tournament a mile from LaGuardia for 2 weeks every year, imposing a fine of over $300,000. So it's all a matter of priority, and we need to make that a priority for our national parks.
Let's go to Needham, Massachusetts. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you, Jane?
Hi. Fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I think it's, Gordon, I think it's great what you do. My family has some land up in Vermont near St. Johnsbury in Danville, and it's just a few hundred acres, and we do, we've really just let it be. We have a small trailer up there, and we go up in the winter and do some snowshoeing, and being out in the middle of the woods, and you can just hear the snow fall. It's mm-hmm. just amazing.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
I feel sorry for anybody who doesn't get that experience.
Anne, thank you. She hears snowfall, Gordon. Here's some sound that you recorded of snow melting. Here it is. Gordon Hempton, you recorded this sound to test John Muir's phrase, snow melting into music.
Sure.
Is that right?
Right. John Muir wrote the phrase, snow melting into music. And as a writer myself, I thought, oh, that's so beautiful, so poetic. But of course, snow doesn't really melt into music. It's nothing you're going to want to dance to or hum all day. But I caught myself and I said, when have I ever closely listened to snow melt? So I went up there and listened to this. All right, it's all I could do not to dance and ruin this recording, because it was like, yes, thank you, John Muir. And John Muir, he uses the words music, voice, and song on literally every page of his handwritten journals to describe the experiences of nature. The earth is music.
Do you have a favorite sound?
Well, in the beauty pageant of the sonic world, I'd say that I have quite a few favorite sounds. I think certainly right up there in the final contestants is a surprising sound. Everybody enjoys the ocean beach, and this recording was from Rialto Beach. Very musical beach where the crashing surf goes across all these pebbled notes, and then the wave retraction is even louder. But it's inside the driftwood log, and these logs at Olympic Park are large enough to walk inside. Mm. And the Sitka spruce logs have special properties that where it vibrates, and so we get to go inside this log and hear nature's largest violin.
We have it. Here it is. You can hear the reverberations, can't you?
Okay, well, we're going to enter in the log. It takes about a minute here. Keep on going. The wave coming up.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the preservation of natural silence. Sound recording artist Gordon Hempton is with me today. He's made it his mission to find, record, and preserve America's last remaining quiet places. I want to play Gordon's recording of the sound of loons in Voyager National Park in Minnesota. Gordon, tell us about that sound.
Oh, I waited 2 weeks for that opportunity. I set up at the edge of a lake, and I could hear the wolves in the distant background before I made this recording, so I was beginning to get a little bit anxious, and the temperatures were quite cold, but I was going to stick it out because, you know, loons, they mate for life, and they return to the same lake. And I wanted to record those first songs of the homecoming of these loons. And there, after dark, the frogs, the peepers in the background with a few toads, that was enough. But all of a sudden, I could hear the wings come soaring in, they land on the lake, and this beautiful duet. Oh, it made the trip oh so worthwhile. And after hearing this, it was a great inspiration for my life, my love life. If I could only be so honest, so true, so expressive.
Let's go back to the phones to Chesapeake, Virginia. Russell's waiting on the line. Hi, Russell. Welcome to On Point.
Yes, there's a place on the East Coast just south of Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's a private resort called Seabrook Island. And I think that contributes to the quietness of this location. It's a religious retreat called Camp St. Christopher. And you go out onto this point on the beach, and literally all you will hear for at least 15 minutes or greater are the lapping of the water, gentle wave action, the seagulls, and the maybe occasional feeding dolphins, but very peaceful. And it would be interesting to do a medical study of people's blood pressure in places like a city versus these nice, quiet locations. Mm. Thank you for your show.
Russell, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Russell. Yes, the noise impacts on human health have been studied. In fact, Goins and Hangler in the Southern Medical Journal, they review, there's 5,000 research articles about the deleterious effects of noise and also the benefits of natural quiet for human health, and it's now being called by the medical community the new secondhand smoke because those damaging effects of noise can occur at even very, very low levels.
How do you think today's iPod generation, kids that are always plugged in, got something in their ears mm-hmm. always, mm-hmm. how do you think they view silence?
Well, I have two of those children now, adults. They're pretty well plugged in. Mm-hmm. In fact, in the book, my daughter is 16 at the time, and she certainly voices the opinion of her generation without holding back any words. But there are two things. One is that with all the noise pollution we have, there are so few places worth listening to. Wearing your personal reality, sonic reality, does make sense. However, the damaging effects of that, for instance, the legal limit of using an iPod in France is 100 decibels, and after 15 minutes you will suffer at least a temporary hearing threshold shift. And so there is no legal limit in this country, but the increase in hearing loss among children today has doubled in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference between living in a quiet world because you cannot hear. You are cut off. You are disconnected. But if you're living in a quiet world, you are actually connected to many square miles. In a quiet place in the United States, it's common to listen for at least 8 miles. And in the book, I hear the stories of Bill Worf, who grew up on a Montana homestead plowing 600 acres by horse, if you can believe that. And he describes the sounds coming from 17 miles away. Hmm.
Let's go to Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Jen is on the line. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show. I would just like to comment briefly about my wonderful experience living on the edge of 12,000 acres of state forest in western Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. After a very traumatic time in my life, I was seeking quiet and peace. And it has been such a wonderful healing experience for me. I have been able to get my thoughts straight. I've been able to meditate. I've been able to hike and walk and listen to all of the wonderful sounds of the things that live in the woods that I can't see. And at times at night when I wake up in the middle of the night, there's absolutely no sound at all. It's absolutely wonderful. It really gives you time and space to look at yourself, to realize who you really are and your connection with the natural world.
Jen, thank you very much. Wonderful. Gordon, how do you think life changes or improves, or how does healing happen, as in Jen's case, by feeling silence?
Quiet is quieting. To be in a quiet place, anyone who just feels like their life is out of control, whether it's for a medical condition or just the stress of their job, and they just need to quiet down and find themselves, find those, you know, those thoughts that really matter. And, you know, this happens to my life, too. I get very busy. In fact, you know, many of the noisy places I go to try to preserve quiet. But then I go to a quiet place, like One Square Inch in Olympic National Park, and it is quieting. Each step of the way through those towering trees over 300 feet tall, the thoughts drop off my mind. And finally, when I get to One Square Inch, it's who I am and what is really important in my life that remains. And generally, it all comes down to love. Love not just for my children and my family, but just love for everyone. And it gives me encouragement. It gives me hope. I recharge. So when I leave a quiet place, I'm also able to then go even to noisy places and scatter the seeds of silence. And they will grow. People are hearing this. I know there is a quiet in all of us, and we can hear it in a quiet place.
I want to play one of your other recordings. Here's the Western Meadowlark from Central California. You waited a long time for that sound,
didn't you? I
did.
I'm always waiting a long time for these noise-free moments. And this meadowlark, oh, he was just, and I say he because it's the males that sing. He just sang to my heart, and after listening and recording for some time, I started to whistle back, too. So it was, and, you know, I was kind of like playing along. We're both doing a little improvisation. The Eastern Meadowlark is also very beautiful and a different song. The surprising thing is that birds learn their songs, and there are local dialects. Hmm. It's amazing. Hmm. It's just amazing.
Let's go to Pocatello, Idaho. Eric is on the line. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Ben. Hello.
Hello. Go ahead. Thank you, Eric, for calling.
I often spend time in the Frank Church Wilderness area up in the middle of Idaho. Mm-hmm. And I know there's no mechanical items, bicycles, nothing allowed up there.
Yes.
Wondering if you had ever been there to listen.
No, I haven't been there, but along the northern border between the U.S. and Canada, there's actually a number of quiet places and very beautiful places. Another area would be like Voyager National Park, Boundary Waters Canoe Area. But Idaho, I have been to northern Idaho and made some successful recordings, but I haven't been to that specific place that you mentioned.
Here's Jennifer in Warwick, Rhode Island. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for calling.
Jane. Oh, Jane, thank you, and a special thanks to your guest. I was driving on the highway, bombarded by all the sounds of highway driving, and had to pull over to listen to to the sound of the loons, which evokes such amazing associations for me. And I'm just so on the verge of tears listening to this, because I think we've become so desensitized in the world to these small sounds. And I remember when my children were young, I used to make them stop and listen to the mourning doves in the morning. And I just loved this whole topic so much. I thank you so much for your efforts to preserve it and to bring our consciousness to it. I wanted to ask you, though, Mr. Hampton, if there were any urban sounds that you liked. I grew up close to New York City, and I used to love fly in my grandmother's apartment to listen to the city sounds. Are there any urban sounds that you like? And I'll take your answers off air.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I love the sonic world, and there are lots of urban sounds that I enjoy. In fact, I started out with my listening training recording urban sounds. Trains that pass through cities and blow their horns, the way it ricochets off the buildings and defines the space. The same is true in Seattle when the ferries arrive and they blast their horn, and it's a beautiful. But my favorite place in Seattle, for example, is at the public market, because it's so vital to have, you know, all the bustle of people and voices, and the tone of the voices are so happy, and the street musicians going on. It just feels alive to me.
To our last caller's question, here's a recording, one of your early recordings, Gordon. It's the sound of an empty industrial fuel tank. And you can hear the eerie echoes of human conversation inside. Here it is.
Oh, I have to laugh.
Because?
Because I was a young bike messenger. That was my day job while I trained myself to become an acoustic ecologist. And I rode my bike down to South Seattle and then hopped inside of this empty fuel tank just to hear the city echo around. Well, the security guard saw that I was in there, and so we're listening to the conversation with the security guard, and that was early enough. This fuel tank was destined for Alaska, and that was early enough where he just was, you know, he was very curious. He was interested in getting inside, too. Yeah, let's listen to it.
Back to the phones now, to Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, George. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I really like Gordon's notion of going to a national park to find peace and quiet. But I wonder, what can we do to turn down the volume on sound in our everyday lives? For example, you know, I'm in a coffee shop trying to read a book, and all around me people are not talking but shouting into their cell phones. And I used to go to the library as my refuge from noise and read there, but even libraries have become no longer quiet refuge from sound. So practically speaking, what do we do if we can't make it out to some beautiful national park?
Yes, Gordon Hempton, your response?
Yes, there are things that you can do. In the back of the book, One Square Inch of Silence, there's a mini manual there, and it tells you how to quiet your office, quiet your home, quiet your neighborhood, also how to find quiet in the wilderness. And the single most important thing you can do to help save silence, and that is to experience it. In George, in your specific circumstance of going into a noisy coffee house, in fact, many, many restaurants are noisy, impossible to carry on a conversation, simply by telling them that if this place were quieter, you would visit it more often, is going to be a meaningful expression. Make sure you talk to the manager.
Here's Lisa in Sarasota, Florida. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hi.
Gordon, I just wanted to share some memories with you. I grew up in Aberdeen and Bainbridge Island.
Oh, yeah,
you
sure.
Know those areas? Yeah.
Home
and
territory.
Exactly. And I spent a lot of time in the Olympic Rainforest. And one of my fondest memories is getting in there in the winter and just laying down and listening to the silence when the snow's everywhere. And just the brooks that are going through there, just amazing. And then one thing I used to do a lot when I lived on Bainbridge was hike down to Fay Bainbridge State Park and sleep down in between the huge driftwood there. And just the insular quality of that wood with the sound of the Puget Sound, and just amazing memories of all that.
Oh, wonderful. I love the falling hush of snow, too, how it unifies everything and makes the space so intimate. And while you were sleeping between the driftwood at Faye Brainbridge, that park there, I've been to it myself to do clamming and spend time in camp with my kids, you were no doubt hearing that low-frequency vibration of the wood fibers and resonance with that acoustic energy from the surf. Oh, yeah, I bet you had a great night's sleep.
You know, Gordon, there are some who might ask, is there a downside to too much silence? I think I know your answer, but I will ask.
Well, I think I really would rather not talk about downsides to anything. What I would say is that there is an important balance that we have in our life. I enjoy the stimulation that sound offers, and I also enjoy the restorative properties of silence and quiet. And the fact is that the opportunity to balance ourselves today is really so rare. There is not a single established quiet area in our national park system, off limits to all aircraft. We deserve it. We deserve to have our national parks, at least a handful of them, become designated national quiet areas.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I have to tell you, since reading your book and preparing for this interview, I have become so sensitive to what I'm hearing. And the first thing this morning,
the mixed blessing.
hearing those birds outside the window, even before my alarm clock, it was joyful. And I thank you for that. It's terrific.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks, Jane.
Gordon Hempton is an acoustic ecologist and author of One Square Inch of Silence, One Man's Quest to Preserve the Quiet. Listeners, all the sound you've heard this hour you can find online at iTunes. We'll go out here with some sound of the sage grouse recorded in Colorado. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.